My name is Dale Parson. I teach computer science at Kutztown University, which is part of the Pennsylvania state system of higher education. Part of the reason I'm here is because I do a lot of work in a planetarium, both with some of my colleagues and many of my students, working primarily with graphics. And so I started out preparing for this, doing a graphical illustration or a graphical application, which I'll give you a brief demo of that. My work with computer music and sound processing in general tends to be in research projects, both by myself and with my students. And so my preparation for this was basically not knowing much about the Cube, going online and getting what information I could. And certainly Eric and Tanner and Willie have been great at supporting us all here technically this week, and I'd like to thank them very much, and also logistically. But I think I shared the experience with a number of my colleagues here that we walked into this not really knowing what we were going to do. And so since I didn't know what I was going to do, an old friend of mine used to say, when you don't know what to do, do what you know. And so that's sort of been my approach to it. So I'll show you what I know, and I'll show you what I did this week. Let's see, bring down the version that works. And off we go with part one of this thing. And so I came in with a model of the dome. I'm sure I know what time it is. I had downloaded the architectural drawings off the internet and hacked them with Photoshop so that I could stack them up in layers. And I do a lot of graphics programming, and so I get a kick out of this, especially on a planetarium dome. I mean, anything that I do, there's so little time that I try to find two or three reasons for doing it. So one of my goals coming here was to have something that I could use in the planetarium after I go back, both to figure out how to do more substantial spatial sound, because we have right now 5 speakers and a subwoofer, that's it. I have more speakers in my study at home than we have in the planetarium, but I want to find out what we should do. Money is scarce, and you know, you want to do something that you're going to use, and so this is an excellent opportunity to go over the top with that. As Eric mentioned, there are very few facilities like this in the world. So at any rate, the layers that you see up there, I basically pulled off the Virginia Tech website. Made them transparent where there are no speakers and catwalks, modeled the speaker locations, and so you can see those in red. And my original intent, which will happen someday, is as I move graphical entities around the dome, I'll compute the distance of a given graphical entity to every speaker, figure out which ones to drive, because it doesn't make sense to drive them all at some minuscule amount, but drive the ones in closest proximity or according to some function based on the location of entities going around the dome. Now, I started doing that over a month ago, and it was clear after about a week I wasn't going to have enough time to do that. So I took the approach that had me feeling this week like sometimes I was taking this expensive, fascinating electron microscope and using it to drive nails into boards. Fortunately, it doesn't break it, and so that's okay. And so that's what you're gonna hear is the sonic equivalent of that tonight. I did try to make a more finessed version, but even this afternoon I was still debugging, and an hour before you all came here, I tested it out, and it's still got some bugs in it. So I think, you know, something that works is better than something that crashes mid-performance, and so this is, I think, got that going for it. Let me bring up a little sound. And so my graphical entities, let's see here. Oh, I have to start SuperCollider. I better start. So this was also new to me. I had never used this sound language until about a month ago. And so I had this thing working at home with 6 speakers and a subwoofer. Let's see, get the one that works. And you know, this is very mnemonic. There's lots of names on these files like Friday this and Thursday that. Tuesday works. And so, You know, and Tuesday was not trivial to get working, believe me. It's just that I had done, I'd say, a good half of the work before I got here. So I'm going to start. Feel free to spot me when I need to set up here. Mistakes here, Eric. I'm going to start the sound language. So there are two languages now that are going to work in this thing. There is the sound language and there is the graphics language. And every time something moves around or changes form in the graphics language, it sends network messages over to the music or the sound language, and the sound language, based on that, figures out what to do with it. So I'll start the sound language up. Appears to be working. So far, so good. And restart the graphics language. And so now I'm going to pop up. I'm going to make sure I have sliders where they should be before I do anything that might blast speakers, but I'm going to pop up a satellite here. And I'm not hearing. Oh, I know why. Better safe than sorry. I usually mute in about four different ways and then remember three of them. So there's a sound source. My sound source is, by the way, I was the only person foolish enough to bring analog equipment. And so I'm sending six signals in. I have three mixers here, and basically what I'm doing is playing feedback. So you all have heard feedback with microphones or feedback with electric guitars. Well, in this case, I take the output from the mixer, feed it back into the input, and what happens is the transistors inside the mixer always have a little bit of electrical noise, thermal noise technically, and so they'll generate some noise that'll get fed back in through other transistors that amplify the noise and filter it for pitch and so on. And so this goes into a continuous loop. Actually, I think all electronic music basically at the root works that way. But again, this is really like driving a nail in a board. And so I have three mixers. Each one of them is doing two channels. And so I'm going to feed six channels of these sorts of sounds into the cube. Now my mapping is an important concept here. My mapping for this evening is the fact that a given satellite is going to be one of those channels. So we'll have up to six satellites flying around the cube, and so therefore up to six sounds of music. Let me send this one around, and you should be able to hear the spatialization. So there it goes. And I mean, in keeping with this philosophy of driving nails into boards, I mean, to me, this is like a big shaker, right? When you're a kid and you get a shaker at Christmas time or something, you know, you bang on it and you shake it in the air. That's my model for the cube. This is not subtle. So I'm gonna throw another voice in there. Now you can hear right away there's some dissonance going on. Typically when I teach zero input mixer, and I've been teaching workshops on how to play this stuff at festivals for about 4 years now, typically what happens is when you first come up, you have that kind of dissonance, because even if you have your setup all set up, there's drift in the transistors, and by the time you unmute them, they're over in the other end of the neighborhood somewhere. So they approximate the same pitch, but they're not quite, and so that generates what's known as a beat frequency, which is a difference frequency between them and also a sum, and so you'll get these little warbles. When they line up on the same side, you're probably going to notice the beat a bit more, the beat frequency. Let's see if I can get them to actually line up. I've played with doing polyrhythms with this thing where you have the satellites running at different rates, maybe three halves the speed of the other one. And so they phase in and out with each other, and then you get rhythmic effects out of that. I'm a five-string banjo player at heart, so honestly, you know, anything over five strings is beyond me anyhow. So you can hear some of that. Now, that's the basis for it. The last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm just going to do about 5 minutes, is that the only property of the graphics that I'm mapping to sound right now is the location of these satellites. And obviously, you can see the satellites are cubes. I could have had cubes rotating or revolving around the cubes, but didn't have a sonic use for it. There are lots of other properties in the graphics that you can map to the sound. So you'll see it change color. I could have sent that information over to the music generator and maybe shifted all the pitches in a certain direction. You'll see sustain on the screen, and you'll see what I mean by sustain. It'll be obvious when you see it. I could map that to sustain in the sound. Didn't do it because didn't have enough time to do it. But once again, there's the old adage, if you don't know it, hum a few bars and I'll fake it. And I think, you know, all good improvisers are used to that. Well, it would be nice to have this 9/10 automated. I got it 3/10 automated, so I'll just do what I would have done, except do it interactively. So at this point, I'm gonna stop talking and actually walk through a skeleton of a piece. Elizabeth used the term sketch. I think that's probably a very good term for what all of us have done this week. If you think about a painting, the artist will work through some sketches before they go through the whole thing. We've been working on sketches all week, or at least I know I have. So thanks for coming, and I will give you a 3-minute sample of what the painting might look like.